You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Brief reminder on Monday's Talk of the Nation in this hour. Afghanistan's finance minister joins Neil Conan for a conversation about rebuilding a nation after war. For the rest of this hour, an update on the smallpox vaccination program. More than 25,000 emergency responders have already received their smallpox vaccination. That's just a fraction of an estimated 500,000 civilian healthcare workers and first responders who were slated to get the vaccination by the end of last February. Over 300,000 U.S. troops have also received the vaccine. Of course, with any vaccine, there is a risk of adverse side effects. In the civilian population, three people who got the vaccine have had heart attacks. Two of those people have since died. There have also been reports of a handful of other heart-related illnesses in civilians. In the vaccinated troops, 11 reports of heart-related adverse events, and none of them fatal. Now, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say there is evidence suggesting that smallpox vaccination may cause inflammation of the heart and its lining. So the CDC is recommending that people with a history of heart disease not receive the vaccine. Joining me now to talk about the vaccine, the possibility of side effects, and the status of the vaccination program is Dr. Brian Strom. He is the chairman of the Committee on Smallpox Vaccination Program Implementation for the Institute of Medicine. That's the National Academy of Sciences. He's also the George S. Pepper Professor of Public Health and Preventive Medicine and a Professor of Medicine and of Pharmacology at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine in Philadelphia. He joins us today by phone. Welcome to the program, Dr. Strom.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be on.
According to the CDC, there is some evidence that the smallpox vaccination can cause heart problems. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So far in the civilian population, which actually the numbers were updated just yesterday, there's about 30,000 people who have been exposed. There have been 4 heart attacks in the civilian population, 2 of whom have died, as you indicate, and as well 2 cases with angina, with chest pain. Mm-hmm. There's also been 4 cases of a myocarditis, of an inflammation of the heart. In the military population, there have now been over 350,000 people exposed. 1 heart attack reported this week, and 14 cases of myocarditis, of inflammation of the heart. It's not at all clear whether or not the heart attacks and angina cases are related to the vaccine or not. These are common conditions. This is a large number of people who have now received the vaccination. And it may well be that this is just the spontaneous background rate of the amount of heart disease you'd expect in the population. CDC is being very cautious and very careful, as they should be, though, in cautioning that people with prior heart conditions not get the vaccine for that reason. Mm. Myocarditis is a totally different condition, and that is a very uncommon condition. Almost surely these are truly being caused by the vaccine.
And how many have gotten that one?
14 in the military and 4 in the civilian population.
And that's above what the background level would be expected.
Correct. And no one is absolutely sure what the background rate would be, but it's clearly an uncommon condition, so these cases almost surely are above the background rate.
Mm-hmm. Are these life-threatening kinds of things?
In all of these cases, the people have recovered, but there can be long-term, it certainly can be life-threatening, and there can be long-term sequelae where after your heart gets infected with a virus, it ends up over the course of years not being able to beat as strongly, and you mm-hmm. develop congestive heart failure.
Mm-hmm. It's like rheumatic fever, that kind of side effect?
Well, it's different than rheumatic fever. Rheumatic fever affects the heart valve. This mm-hmm. affects the heart muscle. So it's actually the muscle itself which is getting inflamed and possibly infected.
Mm-hmm. Aside from the heart problem, any other side effects being reported?
There are certainly lots and lots of side effects. That's not a surprise with this vaccine, but those are the serious ones. There have been 6 cases of transmission of the vaccination from a military person to a civilian person who had not been vaccinated. And there are other cases where people have been what's referred to as auto-inoculated, where they've spread the vaccination from their arm to other parts of their body, including in at least 1 case to the eye. But in terms of there was also 1 case of encephalitis, at least 1 case, I think maybe 2, of encephalitis in the military where the infection went to the brain. Again, the person has recovered from that.
I can imagine with so many people having heart conditions and a lot of people not even knowing they have a heart condition. That's why the CDC would not recommend that.
Correct. Yeah, clearly you, if you have a heart condition, you know, in some ways it could simply be a stress phenomenon. It's like someone with a heart condition who goes out to run to catch a bus.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly they find they have a problem that they didn't know before. People develop fever and chills and an adverse reaction to the vaccination, and it can be that kind of systemic stress.
During the last mass vaccination program in the 60s and 70s, were there any reports of people having heart problems after being vaccinated?
There were not, and that's part of what makes this surprising. The reasons for that are thought to be a couple-fold. I should say the European vaccine, there were cases of myocarditis. The American vaccine, there was not. We largely vaccinated kids, and if they had myocarditis, we might not know it. One of the things that is striking in the myocarditis cases now is they're occurring only in the people who, in the military, who had not had the vaccination before. So people who have had the vaccination before are not getting it, which suggests that they are immune because of the vaccination they had as a child.
Hmm. That's very interesting. Why I keep getting asked this question over and over again. If this vaccination has risks to it, why did we not hear about the risks when we were kids in the 50s and 40s and whatever, getting just routinely vaccinated against smallpox?
There's really two reasons. I mean, clearly, has risks. It is probably the riskiest vaccine ever used in widespread use. The reasons we never used to hear from it is two. One is that most vaccines had such risks in those days. We've gotten spoiled with modern vaccines. They're, in fact, much, much safer. This is a very old vaccine. It's a very old technology. It's, in fact, a technology from the 1700s. The other is that this vaccine clearly has risks, but these risks are tiny compared to the risk of the disease. Smallpox itself has a 30% case fatality rate. 30% of people get the disease die from it. So that when you're using it as was used decades ago in a setting where there is real smallpox out there, and the trade-off is, do you risk getting smallpox and a 30% chance of dying, or do you take the small risk from the vaccine? The trade-off is easy. What's different now is there hasn't been a case of smallpox in the United States since 1949, and there hasn't been a case of smallpox in the world since the 1970s. And so we're vaccinating against a disease that doesn't exist, and that makes the risk of the vaccine a lot harder to accept.
Mm-hmm. Right after 9/11, when we were talking about the idea of another attack and the smallpox vaccine, and people were very much thinking about it, and the idea came that they should vaccinate the emergency responders first. Do you find it unusual that of the 500,000 civilian healthcare workers and first responders who were supposed to be vaccinated as of last February, that only 5% of them have become vaccinated? Do you think that they're worried about side effects?
They're clearly worried about side effects. They're also worried about lack of compensation. I think it's important to recognize that this is not a normal vaccination campaign. You normally, when you vaccinate people, they're taking a small risk, but they also stand to benefit because you're protecting them against a disease that exists.
Mm-hmm.
Here, there's no disease that exists. These people are being asked to take the vaccine for the sake of biopreparedness, which means they're really doing it for the rest of us. And so, but yet, if they suffer serious complications or die, or if they pass it on to a patient and the patient suffers complications and sues them, there's no provision made currently by the government to protect them, and that's a major disincentive. I think it's also important to recognize that the 500,000 figure is a totally arbitrary figure. The original figure was 15,000, in fact, and that came from one smallpox team to care for patients per region, the idea of having a smallpox hospital. And that hospital mounting a team of 100 to 200 people. What they found is no hospital wanted to be identified as the smallpox hospital because then patients wouldn't come. And so they said, well, let's mount a team for every hospital. And that's 100 to 200 people times the number of hospitals, and that generates the number of 450 or 500,000. It's totally arbitrary, and one of the things our committee feel strongly about is it, now it's time to step back and look, because there are a number of areas that already feel that they're prepared with the current numbers. Numbers doesn't give preparedness. What gives preparedness is, in a given region, do we have enough doctors? Do we have enough nurses? Can they travel from one hospital to the other as need be in order to provide the care? And if, for example, we could have 10 million doctors and no nurses, and we wouldn't be prepared. And yet, 100 to 200 people, if they have the right organization and the right mix of occupation, may be all you need in given regions in order to be prepared. And so the key point is preparedness. It's not numbers, and preparedness is much more than and much less than a question of number.
Talking with Dr. Brian Strom about being prepared for smallpox on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. Are you saying that the emphasis on numbers is being too much stressed?
Yeah, I think the emphasis on numbers is totally incorrect. That 500,000 number was purely a seat-of-the-pants calculation, just based on if every hospital had a smallpox response team. Every hospital doesn't need a smallpox response team. We shouldn't be focusing on numbers. We should be focusing on what's necessary. And what we just called for, actually, last week, is for CDC to ask each of the states and local health departments, what do they think they need for preparedness? There are some areas that will be prepared already. There are some areas that are very far from prepared. And included in what they need is some question of numbers, but is also a mix, is also an organization, is also, for example, you could have 500 doctors in one hospital and none in another hospital. And if the case comes into the second hospital, those doctors need privileges in that second hospital in order to be able to treat there. And that kind of preparedness needs to be done in advance and isn't being thought about enough right now.
Is it a state by state, or is it a town by town, or is it a hospital by hospital?
It's definitely not hospital by hospital. It's really region by region. And so whether that's the state or the locality depends on the concentration of population. So, for example, in California, Northern and Southern California clearly are far enough apart that you'd at least want to look at it that way, and possibly broken down in multiple other ways. If you're looking at Rhode Island, on the other hand, it's probably the whole state. And so it's really each state has to ask itself, how does it want to, if a case of smallpox showed up in town X, how would they respond?
Mm-hmm. And they're not doing that.
They haven't. They did that in the beginning, and the answer was, we needed a regional hospital, and then that got changed to we needed all the hospitals. And now that we have a large number of people vaccinated, there has been an enormous amount learned over the last few months. I mean, mobilizing a campaign to vaccinate 30,000 people with a vaccine that hasn't been used for decades and is as toxic as this, and doing it this quickly, is an enormous accomplishment. And what they need to do now is pause and look back and say, how close are we to being done?
Mm-hmm. And weed out the people with any heart problems.
Absolutely, in the process. I mean, the fact that there are people that are being injured by the vaccine is not a surprise. This is a risky vaccine. And so what you don't want to do is you don't want to expose more people than you need. I mean, there's no reason, if you have 100 doctors and you have no nurses, there's no reason to go out and vaccinate 500 firemen, because they're not going to make up for what you're missing in nurses.
Dr. Strom, thank you very much for joining us.
Sure.
Brian Strom is chairman of the Committee on Smallpox Vaccination Program Implementation for the Institute of Medicine. Of course, that's part of the National Academy of Sciences. And he's also a professor of medicine at University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. Our technical director is Kevin Waite. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music, and we had help today, of course, as always, from NPR librarians Kim Molesky and Alphonse Vinn. If you have comments or questions, write to us at Talk of the Nation Science Friday, 1221 6th Avenue, 37th floor, New York, New York, 10020. Or you can send us email and get more information. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Science Friday's Kids Connection is there also. And also you can download past editions of Science Friday in case you missed them. You can listen to them on Real Audio or download them on your Audible player. And all kinds of links and stuff. If you missed them during the hour, they're going to be up there for the next week or so. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.